Hey, hey, this is the Flip Empire Show with Alex Pardo, episode 130.
There's a bunch of things you can really dive into and figure out, hey, who is my person? Who is my, because at the end of the day, every business is built around a customer, and that's your customer, and that's the person you need to get to.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another Flip Empire Masterclass with my man, Darren Collins from Fayetteville, North Carolina. Darren, what's going on, man?
What's up, Alex? How you doing today, buddy?
Everything is good, man. Hey, I know we were just talking about this now, man. We've been trying to connect, seems like for the better part of close to a year. Chris Chico put us in contact, man. So I appreciate you you jumping on here, man.
Awesome, man. Awesome. I'm glad to do it. Looking forward to it.
Sounds great, man. Well, hey, you and I have, you know, we've only had brief conversations. And so, you know, just in case somebody listening in doesn't know who you are, and I want to learn more about you as well, can you just let us know, you know, who's Darren Collins? How'd you get started in this business? And then we can kind of get into what your business looks like today, because a couple of weeks ago, I heard you on a podcast last year. And last year, I think you guys were doing, you were sending out like a million postcards. I know you've built out a call center. You were doing at the time, I want to say 15-ish deals a month, which is amazing. So I want to kind of, you know, I want people to know why you're on here and then, you know, who you are and what your business looks like today.
Sure, sure. Awesome. Yeah, I'm a North Carolina native, man. I grew up in the construction industry. So getting into real estate and rehabbing was kind of a natural thing for me. So when you come out of construction, it was just a progression that we did. I guess we started doing rehabs and things probably, oh man, I guess 15 years ago, something like that, we started in real estate. So we went through the best real estate cycle the world has ever known and the worst real estate cycle the world has ever known. Yeah. And we're still here. So that there must be something to it at the end of the day. But yeah, we started out, man. I actually started out the game when I got in about 15 years ago. I started doing turnkeys. So I was doing just grab a quick property, put a little TLC in it, put a renter in it, and then sell it to a permanent investor who wanted to buy just cash flow. So that's what we were doing. As the market evolved and things, we started to expand. Anyway, after the crash, we lost everything we had. We were in debt, probably $300,000-$400,000, no credit, no money. We didn't even have any credit cards left because we just maxed all the credit cards out, couldn't pay those, yada, yada, yada. Long story. We had about $2,000 left, and it was credit card money. So I had a wife, two girls, and we were moving back to Fayetteville from Charlotte because we had moved to Charlotte during the height of the market. And we had about $2,000 left over, Alex. And so long story, I just said, well, babe, we didn't have anywhere to live. We didn't have any income. We didn't have a job per se. And I spent half the money that we had on signs. And I started nailing up signs again. So I was nailing signs on trees and telephone poles that says we buy houses.
I love it.
We got a house to live in. We got the first month or the first 60 days we were doing it, we had 10 or 12 contracts for houses. We had to do subject to because in those days we didn't have any money. So it just is what it is. So that was 2010. And today is 2017. We are in right now. We're in seven different cities in North Carolina, primarily a wholesaler. We do some turnkeys again, but we're primarily a wholesaler. So we do a lot of different things in house. We do have a call center. We do all of our deals over the phone now. None of my reps, my sales acquisitions guys, none of those guys ever see any house that they get to do.
Wow.
It's just straight over the phone. Last year, yes, we did send about a million. It was 979 or 987,000 postcards we sent out straight to seller last year.
Damn.
And this year we will probably be around 1.5. It just depends on how the second half of the year unfolds, but we'll probably be around 1.5 this year when it's all said and done as far as straight out the door to seller postcards. And I guess right now, We're probably about 85% wholesaling everything we get right now.
Brother, that is some serious volume, man. And you have to have, you know, the infrastructure, the team and the systems, the processes that you must have in your business to be able to handle that kind of volume is impressive. But before I get into that, man, I want to take just a quick second to, man, acknowledge you. I love hearing the rags to riches story. So whenever I connect with someone that has just climbed, you know, they climbed out of such a hole, you know, you were in debt, you know, with two little girls, a wife, a family, you know, $300-400 grand, not having any money other than a couple grand to your name on a credit card to be able to climb and build the kind of business that you've built is hopefully it's inspiring to people listening in right now, because, you know, no matter what ups and downs you go through in your life and how bad you think you have it, you know, I think if you have the right mindset and it's followed by just ridiculous massive action, you can climb out of any hole you might be in and you can completely turn things around. And I think you're living proof of that. So just wanted to take a quick second to acknowledge you, man, because I think that's inspiring.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. I think the main thing, like the main thing in business, the main thing in life, right? Forget business. The main thing in life is consistency. If you want to be successful at anything, it's just be consistent, right? Most newbies and not just newbies though, Alex, most folks get into any game and they go, well, it's not working for me the way the podcast had said it was going to work. You got to realize that I sent out a million postcards last year, but I'm 15 years into the game. And, you know, there was never a point where we had an opportunity just to quit. When you don't do quit and you say, I'm going to succeed, period. There's no option to fail. Mm-hmm. Then you begin to chop the tree every day, no matter what it takes. And there's no such thing as a hole too big or too deep to dig out of. So that's just my motto. Just keep going. Don't stop. Don't get afraid. Everybody goes through ups and downs, but you have to be consistent if you're going to be successful.
Completely agree with you. It's fantastic advice. So, man, I want to dive into now, like, talk to us about your team. And you know, oftentimes people come to me and they ask, you know, how do you go about scaling your wholesaling business? Because I find that, and I've been guilty of this up until not too long ago, if I'm being completely honest with you and with people listening, is, you know, there's been points in my wholesaling business where it's been a roller coaster. You know, there's months that we knock out a bunch of deals, and then I've had those months where, you know, we hear crickets. And you know, my business, and I think a lot of people's businesses, has gone through those ups and downs. So talk to us about what it takes to scale a wholesaling business to the point where you're sending out over a million pieces of mail, you know, you're closing upwards of 10, 15 deals a month. Like, what does it take to get to that point? If you're somebody who's listening, who's never done a deal, or if there's a bunch of people listening out there that do 2, 3, 4, 5 deals a month, and now they want more, like, how do you bridge that gap?
Okay, so here's what I would say, and I just gave you one of the key factors, but there's 3 points to building anything successful, and the first one is always consistency. And I think I talked a little bit about this on another podcast, but number one is consistency, and number two is flexibility, and then number three is honesty. So let's talk a little bit about those, okay? So consistency is committing to, I'm going to keep swinging the axe until the tree falls, mm-hmm. right? And I'm going to do it every day. I'm going to do it every week. So a lot of times what we do is we go, especially in the wholesale business, we go, well, I sent out 20,000 pieces, or I sent out 10,000 pieces and I only got 3 calls. Well, I get that, but you have to send out 10,000 pieces consistently before the market responds to you. So just because you don't get a response that you think you should have gotten on the first mail, it doesn't mean you should stop mailing. Right. And it doesn't matter, or marketing, whatever marketing mechanism you're using, it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean you should stop. So you have to be consistent with that. So that was the biggest key for me, is that I had a couple of mentors that said, I get it. You didn't make any money on the $10,000 you spent last month, and then it just keeps sending it out. And so we had to commit to like 6 to 8 to 10 months first before we started building it. And so in order to build a pipeline, you have to invest. So there has to be seed, before there's a harvest, right? You got to plant something before you can harvest something. So for us, for me in particular, it was be consistent, commit to spending the money over the next 6 to 12 months and let it happen. So that's what we did. So it was consistency. So if you want to scale, you've got to be consistent. So, and I'll tell you a quick story, a side note. Guy calls me up. He says, I think I need to hire somebody as a sales acquisition. I said, man, that's awesome, dude. I said, well, tell me how many leads that you have. He said, we have about 50 leads in the queue. I said, 50 leads? So my guys are making 70, 80 calls a day.
Yeah.
I said, you don't need a sales acquisition guy. You just need to get on the phone and do these 50 leads your own self. So sometimes, you know, a lot of us want to, you know, we have ego involved. So we want to get bigger than what we really are instead of getting the deals done. Right. And then if he would have got a few deals out of those 50 leads, he would have had plenty of money to be consistent in his marketing so that he could actually build a business.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Second piece of that, Alex, is being flexible. You have to be flexible. You can't just say, I'm gonna do Cincinnati, Ohio, or whatever your city is, and I'm gonna do Cincinnati forever, right? You've got to be flexible enough to watch the market turns, and you've got to be reasonable enough to say, well, because we have a market right now, we have a big market in Raleigh that we do. And so I just got my stats back last week, and so my guy is showing me the data on everything that's moving up and down in Raleigh. And he said, Darren, you're just not making any money there. And so I've got to be flexible enough to not get my ego involved to say, I love North Carolina, but Raleigh's not producing any money. Let's find another city.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And that's flexibility. You got to be able to move. You've got to be movable in this thing. If you get too rigid in anything you're doing, then you get trapped in ego and you get trapped in trying to bully a market into producing. And sometimes certain cities at certain times just don't produce, and you got to be flexible enough. And the third thing, it comes right after flexibility, is honest. I have to be honest with my numbers. I have to be honest with myself, what I'm capable of. So if you're not capable of sending out 1 million pieces of mail every year, which is 350 grand, if you can't do that, be honest enough and say, this year I can commit to spending this much money, or this next 6 months, I can commit this much money to spending marketing, and be honest with those numbers, right? So, and to be honest with you, Alex, not everybody needs to scale, right? It's just, you have to get to that place. So I started to scale when I couldn't handle it myself.
Yeah. All right.
That's when it's time to scale. That's when it's time to bring somebody in. When you start losing money because you don't have someone else helping you, now it's time to get somebody in.
Yeah.
But, you know, not because you want to be cool or sexy, just because, man, I'm losing deals, I'm losing money. That's when you bring somebody in, and that's part of it. So you got to be honest with yourself, because it doesn't matter where you want to go. It only matters where you are. So you got to be honest with where you are so that you can get to where you want to go. So that's kind of how I did it. And I think everybody should kind of model that instead of worrying about, well, how many deals did Alex do last month? How many deals did you do? How many deals are you capable of doing? And then if you add another person on, how many deals does that? So every person that I add, every person that I bring onto my team is an investment for me.
Yeah.
It's not because I want to be cute and I want to have somebody answering my phone. It's because I want to invest in them, and then I want to see that investment come back in dollars. Does that make sense?
100%. And I love that, man. So the 3 points, just to recap: consistency, flexibility, and being honest with yourself, being honest with the resources you have, your capabilities, your numbers, all that stuff. A couple of just follow-up questions as far as the first two are concerned: consistency and flexibility. Do you have, Darren, a general rule of thumb that when somebody asks, you know, how much money should I invest in my marketing? Do you typically have a, you know, obviously as much as you can, but, you know, some people use that money to live, right? That's how they put food on the table and they have overhead, et cetera. So do you have a general rule of thumb that you say bare minimum, you know, 15, 20% should go back into marketing? What's your thought process on that?
So as I'm building up, or as I was building up, I would go 25% needs to be seed.
Okay.
It needs to be seed. So if I made a $10,000 deal, I would take $2,500, set it aside, and say, that's my marketing money. So if I did two deals this month at 10 grand, I would take $5,000 and never touch it and put it toward my future seed. So 25% as you're scaling up, and then everything changes as you scale, but 25% of your first fruits or whatever you want to call those, take 25% of that and put it aside. You can't always do that because when you're making, you know, if you make $250,000, you're not going to take, you know, 100 grand and put it aside. But you just have to scale it. And but at the beginning, if it's a single solo entrepreneur, if he does a $10,000 deal, I would tell that guy, take $2,500 and put it as your seed money and then pound marketing. So you figure out how far that $2,500 is going to go, if it's 30 days, 60 days or 90 days, and you make that marketing consistent. So if I'm going to do $2,500 and I'm going to do yellow letters and I'm going to stamp them myself and do all of that stuff, which we did getting started. So everybody should do that. But take that money and say, for the next 30 days, the next 60 days, whatever that is, and this is how much I'm going to do every week. And if you'll be consistent every week, then the pipeline will start to build. And as you're building up, you just need to build. So I got to a place where I had 50, 60, 100 grand sitting aside, and I can go, here's my marketing for the next 6 to 12 months.
Right.
Does that make sense? Is that pretty clear?
Yeah, it does. And if you don't mind, man, I have a couple of just follow-up questions on that, because these are things that I think, you know, my audience and the listener can really benefit from. And I know this because I get these questions often. And so I always want to learn from somebody else, especially somebody that is doing the kind of volume you're doing. Let's say somebody has built up 20 grand, right? That's their seed money for marketing. And that 20 grand is going to cover them for the next, let's just say, 3 or 4 months. How do you go about deploying that capital? In other words, let me kind of ask you a more specific question. Should you focus on one, maybe two lists? Like, at what point are you spreading yourself too thin, trying to hit too many lists? And how much of that needs to be kept for follow-up 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 down the road, whether you're sending 6 to 8 weeks later? Does that make sense?
It does. It does. So I would say that's going to be market specific. That's going to be market specific. So I have a guy who I hire to do all of my data and all of my backdrop. So I'll buy a big list of 400,000 or 500,000 names, and he'll squeeze it and tweak it and turn it and twist it. I would say this, if you're honest and you know your numbers and you have $25,000 or $50,000 sitting aside, you need to go back and look and see exactly what's working. So you should be tracking everything before you got the $25,000. So if you're tracking it, you should be able to say, here's the ones that I'm making the most money on. So, you know, for me, I do it that way. I track my stuff and I go, this city over here is producing 50% of our capital. I need to make sure I never let this city go down. I need to make sure it never depletes. So I do cities. If somebody's in one city and they have 5 different lists, you should split test those lists and just see which one is producing what. So it all boils down to ROI. And so some are going to produce 75 times your dollar. Some are going to produce 3 times your dollar. So you just want to see what that is and then, you know, go at it that way. So for me, I pay somebody to do all that research and kind of dissect that down for me. But I would make sure I'm tracking my number. And if you haven't tracked your numbers up to this point and you're hearing this podcast, then today you should say, I need to make sure where I'm sending my dollars and to what house, and then track the ones that you get and track the money you make on them, and then figure out that avatar for that person. And that's going to be very city or a regional specific.
Yeah.
Because I know guys on the West Coast that do a totally different deal than I do on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a learning progress as well. So for me, that's been a learning curve over the past 15 years to where I can look and say, hey, this city right here, and this is non-owner occupied, out of town owners, whatever, whatever. We need to make sure we kill these. And then some we'll dig a little deeper. It just depends on what city I'm in and how that unfolds.
I'm so glad you talked about the customer and the property avatar. I mean, one of the things I do every year is I look back and we look at all the deals we closed for that year. And what I'm trying to figure out is, if you guys know what a Venn diagram is, it's like 3 circles and they all like overlap. You're looking for that section in the middle that's the common denominator. And like, so for us in South Florida, a couple of years ago, I realized that 90% of the deals we were doing were with seniors, right? People that are 60 years or older. Like very rarely are we buying a house from somebody who's 35, 40, 45 years old. And we started to notice these common denominators. And now that's the kind of data that we use for our marketing. And we kind of leave everything else to the side. And so I'm glad that you brought that up because, you know, especially if you're tight on funds and you don't have a lot of marketing money, I think you need to be very strategic with how you deploy that capital versus just kind of like target the entire county if you're in a big city. You know, that's when I think marketing dollars can kind of go to waste.
I agree wholeheartedly. And if you don't have a track record, then you want to just get basic lists from people who are, you know, seasoned in that and say, hey, what am I looking for? But if you've got any kind of track record and you've closed at least five houses, then you can look at the avatar of that person, that demographic, that zip code. There's a bunch of things you can really dive into and figure out, hey, who is my person? Who is my, because at the end of the day, every business is built around a customer, and that's your customer, and that's the person you need to get to.
Yeah. Well, what are some of those data points? I mean, you rattled off a few of them there. There's, you know, there's the zip code, there's the demographic of the seller, right? Like how old are they? You know, what nationality? Like, what are some of those data points that for somebody who's not tracking that kind of stuff to this level of detail, what are some of those data points that you say it's critical that, you know, if you've done deals, you look back at those deals and you figure out your property customer avatar. Can you talk to us about some of those data points that you track?
Yeah. So age is a huge deal, right? So you want to look back and see what's your age group. Who are you buying houses from? And also the section, like if you're in one city, it's hard for me, but if you're in one city, you want to see what part of that city, what zip code it's coming through. And just, you know, so you can target better. We do psychographics. We do where do they work at? How much money do they make? Is there been a divorce recently? Did somebody die? Did you inherit the property? Out of town owners are a big deal. Like I've got a house in this city, but I live in another city. Those are some key dynamics that you want to look for in your customer, because those are the people that are more serious about selling their house, and that's the person you want to get to.
I love that, man. And let me tell you, the people say the power is in the follow up, the money's in the follow up, but I think the power is in the data. You know, I think once you have that data, now it's you can be very strategic and smart with your marketing dollars. So. I'm glad that you said that, man. Dude, awesome. So for people that are in the process of building a team, what are some of these important key hires that you're looking for?
Well, I'll tell you this. I've got a friend that's on the West Coast, and he's actually doing about $2 million a year in gross profits. And I think for me, just for me, because I'm a type A personality, I'm very visionary. It depends on who you are, right? If you're not a visionary and you're more analytical and more administrative, then you may need to hire a gunslinger. You might need to hire a type A sales and acquisitions guy. That's who I am. So I didn't need that guy, right? Mm-hmm. That guy would have been, we'd have been fighting in the back room, right? So my first hire was an administrator, because I just completely am horrible at that, right? So my first hire was a great administrator. So she was keeping my paper together. She was making sure the contracts were accurate, which I hate to do. All right. You know, if I got a yes from a client, I want to move to the next client. I don't want to talk to them again. So she was kind of my closing coordinator, just keeping it all together. How much money did we make? How much money did we spend? Yada, yada, yada. So I think depending on the personality type that you are, and if you don't know what kind of personality you are, you need to go to Colby, K-O-L-B-E, I think, and do a track on how you're made to function, and it'll give you some barometers. But for me, it was an administrator. That was my first piece that helped me take some of the weight off of my plate. So here's what I would do if I was brand new. I would look at where I'm dropping the ball. Where are you fumbling at in your business? That's the main thing. If you're fumbling at administration, then you need an administrator. If you're fumbling at closing and getting deals actually accomplished, you need a salesperson. Mm-hmm. So it just really depends on who you are as a CEO or as a business owner. That's going to really, really have to do with who's that first person that you hire.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you want to hire everybody. You want to hire the rock stars and the administrators and the, you know, implementers and all of those things and get you out of it and over it instead of in it. But in the beginnings, I would just hire someone who compliments me, and I would look at where I'm fumbling. I just look at your track record and see where you're fumbling the ball, mm-hmm. and then where you're fumbling, you need somebody to step in and help you take that ball over the goal line.
Yeah, and I really think that speaks to your third point. You know, you talked about consistency, flexibility, and honest. I think that would kind of fall into that honest category mm-hmm. about knowing your strengths, knowing what you're capable of, what you enjoy doing within the business, what you don't. And then that's when it starts to help you make these types of hiring decisions, I think.
Agreed. 100%. Yeah. And until, listen, man, you can never, I don't care what you do. If you never do real estate ever again in life, whatever you do in life, if you're not honest with the man in the mirror, the person in the mirror, you're not going to be successful.
That's so good.
And look at yourself and go, I had to look at myself. I still do, man. I'm 45 years old in like a week and a half, and I have to look in the mirror and go, hey, Darren, you stink at administration, dude. You really stink at this. So don't get – when I get my hands on it, I just completely mess it up. My admin girl who's in our office as our chief administrator, she was out last week on vacation. And so all when she got back, like tons of paperwork just packed on her desk because I'm like, I'm not touching that stuff. I'll mess it up for sure. But, you know, we got like 8 deals last week. So, you know, just be honest with yourself. No matter what it is, be integritous with your heart. And if you can't do that, find a coach or a mentor that's going to be really honest. So a friend is someone who will love you like you are. And a coach is someone who will love you for where you're going and be honest with you where you are. So you've got to have both of those in your world. And that's part of that thing that helped me the most is somebody helping me look in my life and go, yeah, you suck at this, D. Don't do this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Gary Vaynerchuk on his podcast talks about that, how entrepreneurs need to be self-aware. And it speaks to your point is you have to take inventory of what you're good at, what you're not, and who you are as a person. And it just, things open up once you know and you have that self-awareness. So, man, I want to pivot here I'll be honest, I'm being a little selfish here because this is kind of where we're at right now in our business, but I think people can really benefit from is I'm noticing here, like I'm on a coastal market, I'm in Miami, South Florida, and you know, direct mail has definitely become more challenging. We're having to spend more money, response rates are somewhat depressed. We're having to spend more to get deals when I track the numbers year over year. And so one of the things we've been doing this year is pounding the phones more, cold calling, and we're seeing some results, but I think that's one of your, you know, unique abilities. Yeah. I mean, you've built out a call center and you guys, you know, you're closing deals without even stepping foot inside of them or meeting with the sellers. Can you talk to us about just best practices, strategies, techniques when it comes to cold calling and then negotiating over the phone?
Yeah. First off, we never negotiate. And I've got I'm really thinking about putting my video training as a sales item, but only to guys who actually have models that are working. But let me tell you, we never negotiate. Let me just clear the slate, Alex. We're not in the house business. We're not in real estate.
People.
We're in people. We're in the people business. And when you realize you're in people, you don't negotiate people. You try to figure out, Mr. Jones, Mrs. Jones, what can I do to help you and serve you today? And when you add value to that person's world, they're going to respond by adding value to your world. So the thing that we do really, really well, and you already have this in your business, follow-up is everything. Mm-hmm. 97% of sales happen after the 10th or the 12th contact. I'm going to let that sink in.
Yeah, I was just going to say pause for a second because that is so powerful if people really wrap their heads around that statement right there.
97% of every sale happens after the 10th to the 12th contact. So that means that you're only going to close 3% of 100 deals less than 10 contacts. That's got to get in your head. So follow-up is everything. So somebody says to me, hey, Darren, my response rate of my direct mail is down. but I have 10,000 people in my CRM. And I go, well, call the 10,000 people 10,000 times.
Yeah.
So you keep calling until they say, if you call me again, I'm coming over there and blowing your building up. Right. That's when you take them off the list. Right. But you just follow up is everything in this business, and every business, man. Follow up is everything. You keep following up. They say, I don't want to sell it for that price. You call them again in 30 to 60 days. Right. So we have a whole formatted system to where how many times we're going to call them the first 3 days, the next 5 days, the next 30 days, the next 30 days after that. And we just keep going until it's dead. So it doesn't. So for me, here's what I look at. I look at response rate, yes, but I look at ROI. So I would say take your mind off from the response rate and look at this. I spent $10,000 and I made how much money on the $10,000? Because once you become consistent with marketing, you're only looking at last month we spent this much and we gained this much. That's what you want to stay consistent with.
Yeah.
And so in the beginning stages, yes, you can go, I spent $5,000 on marketing and I got a $100,000 deal or a $50,000 deal. I 10X my money. There's no way you can do that if you're going to build a big business. So you got to get cool with it and relax a little bit. And because you can't 10X, there's no business in the world. So everybody calls me for the same thing. They go, hey, Darren, how do I scale? And I go, okay, you got to stop trying to make 10 times your money every time you do a deal.
And let me tell you, and that especially now, you know, with Grant Cardone's 10X, like that's kind of counterintuitive because that's like one of the buzzwords now is you want to have that 10X thinking, you want to 10X everything. And so what you're saying, and I agree with, by the way, it's a bit counterintuitive to a lot of people, a lot of type A entrepreneurs out there that are always hustling for more, right?
Yeah. But the reality is if you're going to scale a business, you can't put out $10,000 and expect to make $100,000 back. Not if you scale it. You might hit a home run every now and again, but you can't scale it like that. So just be cool with getting smaller margins and don't get crazy with it and get cool with, okay, last month I got 1% call volume. So I'm boiling it down. So if you were at 10,000 mailers and you got 100 calls, that's 1% call volume.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you only made $10,000 off from the 100 calls? And then what if you said, well, I spent another 10,000 or I sent another 10,000 mailers and only got 50 calls, so my call volume is down and I get all depressed.
Right.
So instead of looking at that, why don't you look at, I still sent out 10,000 mailers and I made $10,000. It doesn't really matter about call volume. It only matters about cash on cash return on investment. That's the only thing I track now. I still have my numbers and how many people call me, but I'm not really.
Yeah, you're not fixated on that.
I'm not fixated. I don't care. If I get one call and make $1 million, I'm happy about this month.
Right. Yeah. So it's a little bit of a mindset shift, and it makes a lot of sense, man. And I don't want to bury the lead, but you know, you talked about it, and because the follow-up is so important, can you kind of quickly highlight what your follow-up system looks like?
Yeah. My follow-up is you keep calling them until they're dead.
I like it.
So here's what we do, man. We do on a fresh call, we call 3 times a day for the first 3 days, and we send immediate text out and emails twice the first 3 days. After the first 3 days, the next 5 or 8 days, I'm not real sure, we call them 1 time a day for the next 7 days, plus they get an email and a text from us. And that's if we still haven't gotten in contact with them. If we get in contact, it falls into a different queue. So anyway, we hadn't gotten in contact with them. And then that's a week and a day or whatever it is. 10 days is what I think it is. After 10 days, they fall into twice a week. We call them. Plus, we have an administrator who's texting and emailing them. We do that for 30 days straight. After that 30 days, we do once a week calling for another 30 or 45 days. And then after that, which is probably, I think that's 4 months, we put it into a cold queue. And then the cold queue is called twice a month, and they're getting an email once a week plus a text twice a month. Okay. And then we keep that going until 12 months. I think there's a six or seven month queue, and it tags them to throw into a bucket, and that bucket gets a blast. So we get an email and a text blast to everybody. It's just a real general blanket type deal. So we keep going. If we don't talk to them, it's not many people we don't talk to within six months. But if we don't talk to them at all, we just keep it going, and we just kind of keep tapping them until it's called dripping. So the model is just to drip. It's just a drip.
What you just recapped are for the people you don't contact. But once you do get them on the phone, then depending on how that conversation goes, that goes into a completely different, you know, follow-up system or whatever the case might be, right?
Completely different. Yeah. Once you contact them, then that rep gets the opportunity to say whether they're hot, warm, or cold based on their response.
Okay. Fantastic. Now, I guess the obvious question for me is, you have a call center, but if you didn't, that's very aggressive follow-up, which I love, but you know, with more leads that come in, it kind of builds on each. So how many team members, if you're going to model that type of follow-up system, how many phone reps do you need to be able to keep up with, forget about, you know, doing a million mailers a month, but let's say somebody's doing 10,000 mailers a month, you know, and let's assume a 1-2% response rate, that, you know, it builds on each other. So is there a certain number of phone reps that you recommend having to be able to keep up with that kind of volume and follow-up?
First off, if anybody in the country is getting a 2% call rate, it's way too high. And it's not going to last. So you don't really have to worry about the average call rate is about 0.5%. And that's going to be consistent all over the nation. Anything over 0.5%, you can just mark it down. It's not going to last. And you're going to be down to around 0.5%. Okay. So, especially in the bigger cities, it's really bad in the bigger cities. So I would tell you this, a lot of that stuff can be automated depending on the CRM you're in. A lot of the follow-ups can be automated via emails and text blasts. So you can do that. The average closer, a closer, what we call a closer, is going to make around 50 to 75 calls a day. Mm-hmm. Okay. So depending on how many leads you have coming in, how many you have on the back draft, you can kind of figure that out. You know, how many, if you got one guy or two guys, or you got a girl that's setting them up for him, a tee up person, you know, there's a lot of different things that come into play with that. But an average closer, a guy who can actually close the deal, he's probably a type A. If he's not a type A, he's almost a type A, or she's almost a type A. So they're only going to make 50 to 75 calls a day. So you can just kind of do those numbers. 5 times 5, 250. If he does work on Saturday, he's only going to do about 25. So he's going to halfway do it on Saturday. So you got 250, 300 calls a week from one person. So you can kind of filter that through and figure out how that's going to, you know, how that's going to affect your follow-ups. And, you know, because you have to keep those following up. But I only let that guy do it. On the new leads, Alex, I only let him do it the first week. After the first week, if we still hadn't had a contact, he has to change the status on that lead, which sends it to somebody else to do the cold follow-up.
I see. Okay. Yeah. So you keep your closers really only focused on the fresh new leads that come in, or the hot ones, and the ones where they can't track them down. You don't have them spending their time and resources trying to connect with those people, it sounds like.
I'm taking, unless they want to keep it, I'm taking the cold leads away from the closers, because you don't want a closer just burning through it. You want to keep that dude, because if he's like me, he's got to be talking to somebody. He's got to be doing something. He's got to be making some stuff happen.
Yeah.
And if he's just burning through leads, that's not his job, right? You want that dude closing deals. So you want that guy closing deals. So if you overwhelm him with cold people who aren't ready to close, he's going to get burnt out and you're going to lose him. So yes, you know, it's better if you have that many, it's better to hire a hourly person to just burn through them as a setter, a tee up person, and then set that guy up to close them. That's what we do.
That's awesome, man. Hey, I want to be respectful of your time. I just got two final questions for you here. One is, and I know this, we can go on for a long time, but maybe you can kind of give us the brief version. Any quick thoughts on, you know, people are always talking about hiring a rock star closer, somebody who's a ninja on the phone. Where have your best phone people or your best closers come from? Like, do you have any suggestions, resources as far as where people can go to hire, you know, a rock star closer?
Yes. That's a tough question, man. If I was in Miami, I would go knock on Grant Cardone's door, and we need to talk about that offline anyway. Okay. So okay. let's make sure we do that. I've reached out to Grant Cardone to see if he has local people who have been through his stuff. I hire people all from, Indeed. Indeed has a really good resource to reach out to people. So we've hired most of our people from Indeed, but word of mouth is what you're going to. So always be hiring. So if you're going to be a CEO, always be hiring. So if you're at a restaurant and you feel like the bartender is a closer, mm-hmm. and you need to talk to that person and go, hey man, what do you really do, man? Is bartending your gig? Blah, blah, blah. And have a conversation. So I'm always looking. I never go anywhere. I never talk to anybody unless I'm always thinking about I'm always hiring. I'm always hiring. I'm always hiring. I'm always hiring. So that's one thing. Indeed's a good resource. A lot of people use ZipRecruiter. I haven't had success with ZipRecruiter. But then word of mouth, telling your insurance guy, telling the guy who cleans your car, your construction people, making sure everybody, putting it on your Facebook page, making sure everyone knows that, hey, I'm hiring and I'm looking for a person. I will tell you this off the cuff. Rock star people who are type A, closer, you better have a lot of leads for that guy to make a lot of money or he's not going to stay. Yeah. You want a more consistent person is going to be better. The fact finder, the follow-up person, that's the better person on the phone. That's the better person for me. But there's a couple of resources. You can use Monster. It's a little expensive. It just depends on where your budget's at, to be honest. But all you got to do is Google, I want to hire some folks, and it'll pop up. But if I'm in a city like Miami, I promise you, I'm over at Cardone University knocking on the doors saying, mm-hmm. hey, I want to hire people coming out of the program because that's I love Grant Cardone. I would never throw any. That dude is a rock star human being. But to me, Chet Holmes, C-H-E-T, Chet Holmes was the best salesperson ever. His training is absolutely second to none. So, you know, you got to be if you're going to hire great sales and acquisitions people, you have to be one first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, man.
Because you never get out of life what you want. You only get out of life what you are. So you got to be something so you can attract it.
That's spot on, man. That's spot on. Dude, this has been awesome, man. Definitely one of my favorite interviews here. This is a question we always kind of end with, and I definitely want you to let people know where they can connect with you. If there's any way that we can add value to you, your business, definitely let us know how. But, you know, rewind the clock. You said you're what? You're 45, Darren?
Yeah, I'll be 45 on the 13th. That's
all right,
accurate.
All right, cool, man. So happy early birthday, first off. But, you know, rewind the clock 15 years. The 30-year-old Darren Collins, knowing what you know now, what's like that one thing you would tell yourself? It could be about business or it could be about life, but what's kind of that one impactful piece of advice that you would share with the 30-year-old Darren that us listening in, you know, can benefit from depending on where they're at in their life?
So the main thing that I tell everybody, and I would do this if I was 30 or 10 or 15, however old I was, be true to yourself. Be honest with yourself. Life starts right in that moment. It never begins until you know who you were born to be, your uniqueness of living. And everyone has uniqueness. So I would go back and tell Darren, be true to you. And let the rest of it unfold. That's the thing. Be true to you and the rest of your life will unfold. And never get off on that. Never try to compete. Never try to compare. Be true to yourself and push yourself as hard as you can to the next level. But be true to yourself.
That's powerful, man. Well, hey, listen, man, again, I really thank you for your time. Where can we connect with you, man? You know, anybody, like what cities do you operate in where if people have deals, they can feed them to you or anything that you might have going on? What's the best place to connect with you?
Yeah. So my website should be up in the next week. It's Darren, D-A-R-R-I-N, Collins.com. And anybody with deals or anything, I'm in North Carolina and South Carolina. If you got anything in those necks of the woods, you can shoot them to us at ThePROHomeBuyers.com. You can just pop on that website, ThePROHomeBuyers.com. And just let me know, man. I'm on Facebook. I'm on, you know, Twitter and all of the other things. You know, I don't do that stuff, but I got somebody that handles all of that. But you'll be able to hit me at DarrenCollins.com and get any information, anything you need from me.
Very cool, man. Well, hey, Darren, man, keep crushing. Appreciate you you dropping wisdom and value bombs on here, man. So thank you for taking the time and for everything you do, man.
All right, brother. Good to talk, Alex, man. We'll talk soon.
All right. We'll talk soon. Take care.
Bye.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to FlipEmpire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.